The 100 Years' War. The interim period at the end of Poitiers to the beginning of the Du Guesclin period. The Paris Revolution collapses. Part 1. When the conference on the bridge was over, the Dauphin decided that he would take a monumental risk. The main obstacle to the confirmation of the treaty by the Parisians was the presence of a large army at its gates, filled with men whose attitude to the city was a mixture of loathing, fear, and lust for plunder. Once the city gate was open, the assembled nobility in the Bois de Vincennes would be beyond control. The Parisians knew that, and so did the Dauphin. So he decided to disarm himself. Criers passed through the ranks of the army announcing the agreement. The greater part of its strength was then dispersed. The Dauphin himself withdrew to Meaux with a small military retinue to wait upon the decision of the Parisians. It was either an act of folly or an act of great statesmanship. Inside the capital, the announcement of the treaty was followed by violent recriminations between rival groups of citizens. Charles of Navarre may never have intended to observe the agreement, and certainly did not propose to do so if the Parisians were willing to carry on the fight. Etienne Marcel and his friends, of course, rejected it outright. They installed themselves in the monastery of St. Eloi on the Ile de la Cité under the protection of the garrison in the palace, and began to make plans to hold out. The diehards were still a sizable part of the population, and they included many of those who were in control of the walls and gates. Bands of them gathered in the street to attack houses belonging to the Dauphin's officers and friends. The Dauphin's treasurer, who was found within the walls, was threatened with death, but finally expelled. But there were other mobs on the streets whose leaders were losing confidence in Marcel and were outraged by the presence in the city of his guard of English and Navarrese soldiers. There had already been a number of serious incidents involving the Anglo-Navarrese garrison of St. Cloud and Saint-Denis. Anti-English feeling was rising. On the afternoon of July the 21st, 1358, the anti-Navarrese party came onto the streets in force and took over much of the city. 34 Englishmen were lynched in the streets or at their billets. The crowd invaded Charles of Navarre's headquarters at the Hotel de Nesle. They seized another 47 English officers who had just finished dining with him. More than 400 others were rounded up in their lodgings in the course of the evening. Marcel, of course, did his best to keep control. He persuaded the mob to surrender the English prisoners on the pretext that they would be exchanged for French prisoners of the war in England. Then he took them under his own protection behind the walls of the Louvre. Well, Charles of Navarre was very alarmed. He called for reinforcements from his allies and retainers in the west. In the capital, the Captal de Buch joined him, fresh from his fight against the Jacques at Marche des Murs. Philip of Navarre scoured the garrisons of Brittany and Normandy for men, and he assembled a considerable force. Like Charles's army around Paris, it consisted mainly of English troops. But they were no longer simply English mercenaries hiring out their arms. Several of the principal English commanders on the Breton march now joined Philip's force with their men, including Robert Knowles, Hugh Cavalier, and a Northamptonman called John Fotheringhay, who served as Philip's marshal. Now, there cannot have been time to consult Edward III's ministers at Westminster over this issue, but Edward's representatives on the spot were certainly implicated. The new army was accompanied by two men very close to the King of England, Gilbert Castellien and Stephen Cussington. Castellien, a knight of the royal household for many years, had been one of Edward's ambassadors at the conference which produced the Treaty of Bordeaux. In 1358, he was one of the king's own personal representatives in Normandy. Cussington was the other one, was also the captain of Edward III's garrison at Saint-Savard-des-Vicomtes. He had been the Prince of Wales' aide-de-camp at the Battle of Poitiers and was frequently employed by the king in difficult and confidential missions. Since he had been with Edward at Westminster as recently as June, he knew the king's mind, if anyone did. On the morning after the anti-English riots, there was a tense meeting in the town hall, attended by the leaders of the Parisian Revolution. Charles of Navarre, Etienne Marcel, and Robert Lecoq were all there. The building was full of armed guards, but outside, in the Place de Grève, a huge and threatening mob gathered, shouting anti-English slogans. Charles tried to address them, spoke to them, saying that the English troops were his retainers and that they were working for the defense of the city, that they had saved it from being pillaged by the Dauphin's army. It was wrong to attack them. Unfortunately for Charles, his oratory had lost its spell. He was simply shouted down. The mob wanted the English prisoners in the Louvre put to death. They demanded that the King of Navarre and the Provost of the Merchants should lead them at once against the garrisons of St. Cloud and St. Denis. Now, that's not the Dauphin's forces. That's Charles of Navarre's forces. The two men were simply in no position, with their small force of bodyguards, to defy the furious crowds. They were forced to put themselves at the head of a disorderly armed mob and march against their own mercenaries. In the early evening, between 2,000 and 3,000 Parisians poured out of the gates in the north wall of the city. The King of Navarre and the Provost of the Merchants tried to play for time. They hoped that anger at their backs would dissipate with time and darkness. They called a halt just beyond the northern suburbs, at the foot of the hill of Montmartre. There they formed up their men in the three battalions. Then, after a certain amount of delay, they continued north by ordering an about turn towards the bridge of St. Cloud. The Parisians' route passed through a dense wood just east of the bridge. Here they marched straight into an ambush laid for them by the English garrison. About 600 Parisians were killed. Many of those who escaped were drowned in the bends of the Seine. The King of Navarre simply looked impassively from the rear without intervening. The Parisians believed that he had deliberately betrayed them, and they were probably right. Immediately after the disaster, Charles rode as fast as he could to St. Denis and then shut himself behind the walls of the abbey. Of course, Etienne Marcel is in even worse position because he is the one leading the Parisian revolt. So he is now going to return to Paris and see if he can appease his people. Now, the sources for this: The 100 Years' War by Perrois, The 100 Years' War by Nylands, and The 100 Years' War, Volume 2, Trial by Fire, by Sumption. So I hope you enjoyed that, and as always, don't forget to come by the website, summahistorica.com or historyaccordingtobob.com. Ask a question, leave a comment, check out our merchandise, and if you like what we're doing, please feel free to support us. Thank you very much.